Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2008 Home Education Conference held in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hello, my name is Nicolene Peck. And my topic today is teaching self-government. The Proclamation for the Family says, "Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness, to provide for their physical and spiritual needs, to teach them to love and serve one another, to observe the commandments of God, and to be law-abiding citizens wherever they live." So in other words, we actually have a sacred duty to teach our children how to problem solve, what's right and wrong, and how to choose right. And the way that you teach this is by helping them to have a change of heart. Not just behavioral training, although we are going to talk about how to take specific behaviors and change them into appropriate or desirable behaviors. More than that, we want to focus on having the Spirit with us and being able to touch their heart. Even more important than these behavior changes is that change of heart. All right. In Charles Dickens' classic, Great Expectations, there's this little character. His name's Pip. I don't know if you've read that before, but Pip's parents have died, and he's being raised by his sister and his brother-in-law. And his sister is quite abusive, verbally and physically and everything. And she hits him all the time and yells at him and these kinds of things. And his brother-in-law is so kind. And he always tells Pip all these great things about him, and he motivates him, and he's calm, he's more soft-spoken. Well, naturally, Pip is more drawn to his brother-in-law than his sister. His sister keeps telling him how lucky he is that she is raising him up by hand. And all the people in the town keep saying, "You are so lucky that your sister is raising you up by hand." This is a particular term that they keep using. And in little Pip's mind, he's thinking, "How can I be lucky to be raised up by hand?" Because by hand, he's thinking like whack with the hand, you know, by hand. And when I was reading that, I started thinking, I wonder if any of us ever give the wrong impression to our children about what our role is as parents, and if we really enjoy what we do, and when we're trying to instruct them, if we instead instruct them with fear, and we draw their relationship away from us, instead of trying to help them change and draw closer to God, which is my ultimate goal as a parent. So when all of these things happen, when sometimes they get confused, then we know that we're not communicating correctly. I'm a big-time communicator. My dad is a communication professor, and so communication was really important in our home. Not that he was a perfect parent. I won't tell you all his flaws because we don't have time, but but he was a really big communicator, and he did teach us that every single thing you do communicates something to somebody. I would be in classes, church classes or school classes or wherever, and he would say, "You think you can't learn from them, but watch how they're communicating. You can learn something from everybody by what they're communicating. I bet you don't realize you're learning things from them." And he would keep us focusing on how people were communicating to us, because that's what his big thing was communications to other people. Well, I've often realized that the children also don't realize what they're communicating. So they see what we're communicating. We don't see what we're communicating necessarily to them. We may be communicating frustration or anger or annoyance or all these kinds of things to them when that wasn't necessarily our plan. And then they're communicating things to us, too, that they don't realize they're communicating. So if all of a sudden somebody is standing there with their arms folded and their eyes looking up, what are they communicating? "Oh, brother," right? great. I'm not listening to you. I don't want to. That's what they're communicating. And they don't realize that they're communicating disrespect, so that then you get frustrated with them, and then you disrespect them, and then it goes back and forth and back and forth, and it starts a power struggle because of somebody's wrong communication at the very beginning. So I often make it a point to point out to the children what they're communicating. So if you can get in the habit at the very beginning of looking at things in a very analytical way. So somebody is standing here like this with their arms folded and their eyes, you know, rolling their eyes. Then I would say to them, you know, right now you're standing there folding your arms, tipping your hip to one side, and you're not looking at me. You're rolling your eyes. You're looking up. Tell them exactly what they look like. And sometimes even I show them like this, and I show them exactly what they're looking like. And then I say, you know, when you stand like that, it tells me that you don't want to listen to what I have to tell you, that your heart's not in the right place, and you're not ready to be taught. And my role as a parent is to teach you how to change this particular behavior so that you can be a success in the world, so that you can make a difference in the world. But I need to know you're ready to be taught, and you're showing me that you're not. And they don't realize that that's what they're showing. There was one day we were at a homeschool park day thing. We were all playing soccer. All these moms got together to play soccer. And the big kids were all over in one area playing soccer, and the little kids were over in the other area playing soccer. And most of the moms were with the little kids because they didn't know how to kick it, you know, and we were working on that. And the big kids were going. They were having a great soccer game. And all of a sudden, this new boy showed up to the park and wanted to come over to the soccer game. Well, he went over to the soccer game, and for some reason, he got everybody just talking instead of playing soccer. And then they started just kind of wandering, and they weren't playing soccer. And the mothers are standing over there with me, with the little kids, looking at, what do we do? Should we tell them they have to play soccer? Is that right? You know, this kind of thing. And all of a sudden, the thought came into my head, they're communicating something to their parents, and they have no idea that they're communicating to their parents. So I said, okay, I'm going to go change the tide. So I walked over there, and I gathered all the children around, and I said, okay, come here, everybody. Do you realize that right now you're telling your parents that it was a waste of time to bring you here today? Do you realize that? I said, because, see, we came here to play soccer, and it was going really good. And now all of a sudden, nobody's playing soccer, and you're all just sitting around and talking, and nothing's happening. And so the parents feel like they came all this way for no reason. Is that what you wanted to communicate with them? And they're like, well, no, you know, we didn't. We were just, you know, trying to see if maybe we wanted to do something else. And I said, okay, well, I just want you to remember that everything you do, somebody's going to be watching it. And if that's not what you want to communicate, you might want to change to what you do want to communicate. And I just walked away. And, you know, 2 seconds later, they all started playing soccer again. But they just didn't know. They didn't know that that was the message that they were giving, and that their mothers were over there going, great, what do we bring them for if they're just going to sit there and, you know, talk and not do things? So everything we do communicates something to somebody. And as parents, we absolutely vitally must remember that. And the children in our home need to know that, which means we just have to describe more. All right, I want to do a quick vision exercise so that we can get in touch with our children a little bit before we start talking about modifying all of their behaviors and all that great stuff. So close your eyes. And I want you to take time to picture yourself as a child. What did you look like? You were probably really cute. Now, I want you to take a minute to remember that argument that you had with your parents. You know that one argument. Where were you? What was the setting like? You got real mad. What did you look like when you got mad? What was your body language like? What was your parents saying? What were you saying? What were you feeling? What were your anxieties like? What did you want to tell them? What didn't they understand? Okay, now open your eyes. There are times in all of our lives when we weren't understood. I hope that you can remember a time that you argued with your parents. If you didn't ever argue with your parents, you are awesome. You are my hero. I teach this because I was a horrible kid. I was really bad. And I remember, I was really headstrong. Remember, if you were here yesterday, I told you I'm like a red-yellow personality. So that red part of me just was not going to be governed with an iron fist. It wasn't going to happen. I was going to raise my fist and go back against my parents. So I remember what it feels like to be frustrated at my parents, to feel like I know more than they do and they don't get it. Many of your children, especially when they get to about age 13, really truly feel that way. And for them, that is a truth inside of them. They think, you know what, I know more about this. Which means that we've got to try to understand them. Stephen Covey says, seek to understand, then to be understood. Especially with our older children, we must remember that. Parenting, it's about changing that feeling. And the only way to change that feeling is to make sure that we understand what they're feeling first. Now, that's tricky because some children don't want to have a counselor as a parent, right? Come up to them and have them sit down and tell me all about it. Because there's some children, and had we got to it in the first class yesterday, which we didn't, but we talked about how there's some children who are talkers and some that are listeners, and some will just tell you everything. And some won't tell you anything unless it's the right circumstance. And then they might unload things on you. And at that point, it's going to blow you away because it's so deep and you had no idea that whatever it was that deep. But to wait for that is sometimes very hard, or to create the environment where that happens. Well, that's a tricky thing to try and get some children to open up. So what you have to do as a parent is you have to think, okay, I remember what I felt like when I was a child. I think it's no accident that we all have childhoods, because we have to be able to draw upon those experiences to try to see what they possibly could be feeling. So I often find myself thinking, okay, I remember situations kind of like that. I remember feeling, oh yeah, I would have felt really anxious right then. I would have felt like that. And so then I can go up to them, and you know, if my child's love language is a touch or something, and they're a toucher, and I'll go up to them and touch them, and you know what? Right now, I know that you probably think I really don't even care. But I want to tell you something. I want to tell you I do care. And I want to tell you that what you want is really important to me. And if you just tell me what you want, then we can see if we can make that happen. And just to perceive that they need that they need you to come and tell them that. Okay, so that's seeking to understand. We need to do that. My son, who's 4 years old, works with small children, of course, too. I was cooking one night. I was standing in the kitchen, stirring something, thinking. I must have been adding ingredients or something. I can't even remember. But you know how sometimes you're just cooking, and somebody comes up to you. And so my little four-year-old comes up to me, and he says, Mommy, I want some water in a sippy. Cold water in a sippy. You know, and he's asking me for that. For some reason, I was ignoring him. No idea why I would do this, but I just did because I was just thinking. And all of a sudden, he was crying at the top of the stairs. And that took me out of my whatever I was thinking. And I went, oh, no. He thinks I don't understand him. And the only thing he knows to do is to sit down and to cry. And I realized I've got to tell him, just to tell him that I understand him. So I walked over to the stairs, and I said, Porter, I know that you want a sippy of water, and you want it to be cold water, and I know that right now you think Mommy didn't hear you, and you're upset, and you're sad because you think Mommy didn't want to listen to you, and I am so sorry. I for some reason was thinking, and I wasn't listening, and I gave him a big hug, and I said, let's go get you a sippy of water. As soon as I told him, I know that this is what you're thinking, because I just surmised it, then he just brightened up. he stopped crying. That's what he needed to know. Sometimes your child can be having a hard time, and you can just tell them, I know that this is what the problem is. And just them knowing that you know, big deal. Because almost everything they do to act out is to get you to know something. That's why they do it. All right. What is seen and what is not seen? Frederick Bastiat wrote an essay in his book Political Economy. And, you know, when you're kind of a parenting-minded person like me, almost everything is parenting, even if it's political economy. And so I read this and I went, this isn't about political economy. This is about parenting. And what he's saying is there are things that are seen with our children, and then there are things that are not seen. And so as we're talking about trying to understand, we need to make sure that we try to look for what is not seen. In 2 Corinthians 4:8, it says, while we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, and the things which are not seen are eternal. That's interesting. That means that our biggest responsibility is to change and mold that which is not seen, which is the heart. There are other things that are not seen. They have these little balls of anxiety. Hopefully you felt a ball of anxiety when you did your vision and you were thinking about that time when you were a child. Because that's what happens to them. Children are very anxious. They have all this anxiety in them all the time. We might be able to see that they're rolling their eyes or that they're crying and that it's very loud and you're at the store and you wish they wouldn't be crying very loud at the store. But what we're not looking at oftentimes is that they've got this huge ball of anxiety in their stomach and they just want that feeling, that horrible feeling, to go away. We can help them with that. If we take time to remember that those things inside of them which are not seen are really there. It is also sometimes not seen, by the way, that children need food and sleep and stuff like that. You know, my four-year-old on this trip, he's been putting in some pretty late hours. the other night, he just all of a sudden, he got one little inadvertent scratch from a family member and just busted out into tears. And I went, oh my, the boy needs rest. He just needs sleep. And so we got him calmed down and just got him to bed as soon as we could. But sometimes all the teaching you do is not going to matter if your child really needs food or really needs sleep. Sometimes you need to write it down on a pad of paper, stick it in your back pocket, and pull it out later, talk about it when they wake up, and they will be with you on talking about correcting that behavior. There's a book by Glenn Latham, Dr. Glenn Latham. He is a professor, or was a professor, he may have retired by now, I don't know, up at the University of Utah. He wrote a book called The Power of Positive Parenting, and it's actually a really good book. Until my book's done, I would say that's a pretty decent book to take a look at. It's not going to be exactly what I do, but he's pretty well on the mark as far as teaching cause and effect and stuff, which is a lot of what we're going to be learning today. But in that book, he says that it is often not seen that parents are to blame for their child's bad behavior. And I read that and I went, I don't know. I don't know about that, because each person has their own free agency to choose and all of that kind of stuff. But the more I really thought about it and observed my children and their behaviors and observed my foster children and their behaviors, I realized he's right. He's really right. Not that the foster children's behaviors could be blamed on me, because they were coming from someone else. But it's true. When I met their parents, I realized, oh, now I know why you're that way. So if there's something that is really bothering us with our children, be sure to look at what's not seen, that sometimes there's absolutely going to be no way you can change a behavior in your child unless you choose to be proactive and change it in yourself first. So be sure to look at yourself. And a lot of this is, when we talk about teaching self-government to other people, you absolutely have to know how to self-govern yourself first, right? So anyway, there's a story of a boy who was very sick. He lived in India, and he would only eat sugar. That's why he was so sick. And his mother was very concerned about him, and so she decided to take him to see Gandhi because he really revered Gandhi. So they got on a train and they drove, or they, you know, rode across India to go and see Gandhi. And when they got there, they had to wait to see him. He was with some men, and after he was done, she said, "Gandhi, my son is so sick. I'm afraid he's going to die. He will only eat sugar. And I know that if you tell him to stop eating sugar, that he will stop because he reveres you so much." And so Gandhi said, "Okay, come back in a month." And she said, "Okay." And so they got on a train and they left. And a month later they came back and the boy was more sickly and frail and really almost near death. And the mother, they came in to see Gandhi and they saw him, and Gandhi looked at him and he said, "Don't eat sugar." And the mother said, "Is that it? Okay, you could have said that a month ago. Look at him. He is so much more sick and everything. Why didn't you tell him that a month ago?" And Gandhi said, "A month ago, I was still eating sugar." Ouch. We've got to look at ourselves. Sometimes we don't see that it's us. All right. We are going to be talking heavily about cause and effect. Now, you would think that people know cause and effect pretty well. Starting at a really young age, if you throw something, it comes down. If you push something, it moves forward. All these different kinds of physic things and stuff, cause and effect. But that is primarily what I teach in my home. I teach them that they're communicating something, and I teach them that there is a cause and effect for everything that they do. For someone to learn how to govern themselves, they have to be able to see the effect before they choose a cause. So, and when these foster children would come to my home, they really did not know cause and effect. They were ages 12 to 18, and they didn't know that if you, you know, sexually abuse somebody, you won't be able to stay with your family anymore, or whatever it is. Or they didn't know that if you swear at somebody, they might hit you, or these different things. They didn't know this, and because it wasn't part of their culture, because they never had to follow through with anything, and that if they ever didn't want to deal with something, they would just run away from it. They never had to answer to their effects. They just kept choosing cause after cause after cause, and not paying any attention to the effects. So anyway, so we teach cause and effect. A cause and effect is huge. It's pretty much the base for everything that we're going to talk about. But then we're going to talk about the language and how we teach it to them in a way that is not mean. Because you can teach cause and effect mean, and you can teach cause and effect having an attitude problem or having a power struggle or in a lecture or all kinds of different ways, but hopefully we'll teach you a better way to actually teach cause and effect to your children today. We do some problem-solving exercises. They're called SODAs. Does everybody have a handout? Because I like my children, as far as learning cause and effect, it is really important for them to know how to problem-solve. I've got more papers here if someone wants to hand them around. We've got someone right there. And for the problem-solving exercises. Okay, SODAS is an acronym. An acronym, it means situation, options, disadvantages, advantages, and solution. And have any of you ever done a pros and cons list? Yeah? Okay, pros and cons lists are very similar to SODAS, except for that pros and cons lists have this, like, this little deviant side, kind of. Pros and cons lists suggest to you, really, that, like, that on the whatever the good thing is will just always look good, and whatever the bad thing is will always look bad. And so it will be so easy, once you do a pros and cons list, to really decide what is, you know, what is right and what is wrong. Now, this is a pros and cons list, but it's done a little bit differently. And we focus on that, you know, sometimes for making a good choice to a person, there's a lot of disadvantages to making a good choice. And you wouldn't think, you know, normally pros and cons list doesn't work that way. At least it didn't when I was, when my parents said, make a pros and cons list about it. And actually, they never usually had me make pros and cons lists about my behaviors. But this is essentially what this is. So, let me give you an example. So we had an experience where we were at the store, And my son, and this was when he was about 7 years old, he wandered off. We were looking for clothes for his sister, and he just decided that he was sick of being with us looking with clothes for his sister. So we were at Walmart, and he just wandered away. And all of a sudden, I look around, and he's nowhere to be found. So then, of course, you go on this frantic hunt for your child. And we're looking all over, and we couldn't find him anywhere. And we looked in all the clothes racks and all the places where normally 7-year-old children hide. And he wasn't there. And then finally, I contacted the store people, and they were all looking all over for him. They had their little agent people out with things there looking for him. And then they called out like an Adam alert thing, and they were ready to shut the doors to the store because it was getting really out of control. And I was so worried, of course, as a mother, I was just dying that my child wasn't there. Well, finally they found him, and then I embraced him. Oh, I'm so happy that you're safe. We are going to talk about this when we get home. Because at that point, I was in no position at all to teach cause and effect to my child, right? Because I was an emotional wreck. So anyway, so then we went home and we talked about it. And then I decided that it was really good for him to do a soda or to do a problem-solving exercise about the experience. So I gave him a situation. It happened to be the very exact situation that we just did. So the situation was you were at the store with the family shopping for new clothes and with your sister, and you become bored. I give him that, and then he writes it down. Or if they're young children, they won't write this. You'll either do it verbally and write it for them, or just verbally. Sometimes we just do it in the car, just verbally. Don't get in the habit of always doing it verbally, though. It's very nice to be able to have it to look at and to discuss afterward. So oftentimes if they're small, I'll write it for them. But then as they get bigger, I just give them the situation. Either I write it or they write it. And then they finish the rest of what we're going to talk about. So they come up with options. Option number one was stay with the family. Option number two was whine because I'm not having fun. Option number three was walk off by myself. Those were the only things he could think of. I tried to have them think of at least three options. There is not always two options. And that's the part of cause and effect that a lot of people don't really get, is that they think you can either pick this or you can pick this. But usually there's a whole bunch of other things that you could pick. If you put your mind to it, there's more than just walk off or stay. He thought, well, I could whine. he thought of something else he could do. Okay, so then you go through the disadvantages. So 1A, the disadvantages to staying with the family are, I might still be bored. Another disadvantage, I won't get to see the stuff I want to. Another disadvantage, I have to listen to girl stuff. Then he thought of disadvantages for whining. I will get criticism from my mom. I will get myself in even a worse mood. I was proud of him for that. This is a true one, actually. I just took it and typed it up. And another disadvantage for whining would be that it might take longer to get done shopping. I thought that was interesting that he was able to come up with. And then a disadvantage for walk off by myself would be I could get lost, or I could get criticism and consequences when found. He learned that from experience. If I get lost, we might end up at the store even longer. He did not want to be at the store. That was not a fun thing for him that day. So then you go to advantages. What are the advantages of staying with the family? No one gets worried or upset. I don't have to talk with anyone about bad behavior. If you never know a rationale to give your child that will matter to them, if you can't think of anything else, remember in your mind, they don't want to be having that conversation with you right then. So you can tell them, you know what? We wouldn't have to be talking about this. We wouldn't even have to have these kind of talks if you chose this other right choice. And that is a rationale or a reason why they might care. If there's no other reason, please try to come up with other reasons. You know, don't use that one like every single time. Okay, and then let's see. Advantages for whining, because there are advantages for whining. We could leave sooner because mom will get tired of me. That's why he would do it. Or my opinions would be heard. Now that's important, isn't it? Because that's what they want, for their opinions to be heard. And then none. He couldn't think of another advantage for whining. Now don't ever let him write none, 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 okay? Because there's not ever that, okay? They would never pick it if there wasn't some sort of advantage. All right, so advantages to walking off by myself. I get time alone to see stuff for me. Mom knows how I feel. And then he couldn't think of anything else. And then the solution, they get a pick. I choose to stay with the family while shopping. Now, they could pick, I choose to whine, or I choose to walk off. That's okay. It's their choice. So don't try to coerce them to pick what you would choose. Because what they want to know is they want to know that you really want them to make their own choice. And some kids just want to see they can get a rise out of you. You know, really. And that's okay. Let them know it really is your choice. And then you can just say, that's really interesting that you would still pick to walk off. But at least we've been through this exercise and you know what would happen when you do walk off, you know, when you choose that. So anyway. All right. You're going to want to yes. Oh, consequence-wise? Thank you. Yes. He actually did earn a consequence. At that particular time, he earned kind of a natural consequence. I decided that his consequence was that he had to sit in the shopping cart whenever we went to the store for a month, and he's 7. And I said, you have to stay with me in the cart so that I know that you're going to be there. Normally, I don't make up different consequences, but as I was thinking about it, I thought, you know what? I think that one will let him know that I am worried about him getting lost probably the most. And I wasn't mean about it. I just said, you know, that's what you'd earn to sit in the shopping cart because we have to keep you safe. We can't be walking. That was kind of an important situation. You know, we had to make something different. So that's what we did. Because that's, yes?
Is it bad to say, is there a consequence you could be kidnapped?
Okay, is it bad to say as a consequence that you could be kidnapped because you don't want to scare them or something? No, you can definitely say that. I think they need to know cause and effect. What really are the effects? I'm quite, you know, right there with my kids and tell them exactly everything. I don't beat around any bushes. I don't think it does any kind of service whatsoever. I talk to my children at a very young age about sexual things, all kinds of stuff like that, because our world is a different place than it was when I was a kid. Okay, there was one more question, and then we need to keep going. Yes? Okay, the question is, are they supposed to come up with these consequences on their own, or do I supply them?
I was thinking in terms of the set of problem-solving, advantages and disadvantages.
They come up with all of that on the soda sheet. They come up with everything on the soda sheet themselves, except for the situation. So, and then we discuss it together afterward. So we sit down and we talk about it, and then whatever they pick is fine. And then sometimes they'll pick the wrong thing just to see, and you'll say, oh, that's really interesting that you picked that. I'm glad to know, you know, so we can be careful and watch for that behavior and teach to it. And then they'll be like, you know what, well, actually, I probably would pick this. And they, you know, they just wanted to see if they could power struggle you in that particular situation. Everyone wants power in the family. The parents want power. The children want power. Everyone wants power. And there are a lot of different ways to get power. But what we are talking about in this class is how to give power to them, how we can have power and they can have power, how everyone can have power. It's called the power to control yourself, the power to decide, the power to choose your own destiny. That is the power, and that power they want and love. Okay, I've got to teach you the four basic skills. The four basic skills. Here's another sheet. If you do not have the packet, raise your hand again, and she will hand out this sheet to you of the four basic skills. While you're at it, hand these. It comes next. Okay. So the four basic skills. Now, 99.9% of all behaviors are part of these four basic skills. Really and truly, you can teach these four basic skills, and they can be just about everything that you need to talk about at all. So the first one is following instructions. So give me almost any chore is like make bed or anything. That's all follow instructions. Anything, take over your dishes after a meal, clean up this or that, go get that for me. Hitting your sister, well, no, that's disagreeing appropriately. But following instructions is like almost everything. And so if you can teach them the steps of following an instruction, then you can teach them how to do every chore, how to do everything. So following instruction is really important, and it gives them peace because they don't have to wonder, what am I supposed to do with this? This seems so overwhelming. They've learned the skills of how to follow an instruction. So these are the steps. You look at the person. You keep a calm voice and a calm face. You say, okay. You do the task immediately, and then you check back. So I say calm voice and a calm face because I'm going to just use these. It's easier. Okay, I say calm voice and a calm face because if they won't look at you, let's start with look at the person. Okay, the first step is look at the person. So if they don't look at you, if you're talking to them and they're like this, are they ready to be taught if they can't look at you? No. So don't waste your time teaching or talking back to somebody who won't even look at you. They won't look at you because their soul can't touch your soul yet. Eyes are really good conduits for heart transfer. If we're talking about changing their heart, we've got to see their eyes. And they've got to see our eyes. All right? And then keep a calm voice and a calm face. If I said, I think it's Benjamin, right? If I said, Benjamin, I need you to go take out the garbage. And if Benjamin said, whatever. Is that very calm? Is that a I'm ready to be taught kind of an answer? Or I really want to follow this instruction for you? No, that's not. So I teach my children to say okay. That's the next step. Say okay, and they keep their body language nice and, because if they're, you know, like we talked about before, folding their arms, gritting their teeth, okay. That is not saying okay with a calm voice and a calm face. I teach them to say okay, not fine or anything else, because okay tells me and tells them, they tell themselves, I am okay with mom and dad telling me things to do. There must be respect in the home. I know that some people taught things years ago about being a parent, being your child's friend and all that kind of stuff. And I do believe you have to have a great relationship, but you have to be the parent. That's your job. And so that means that they have to respect that. And you have to be worthy of that respect too. Okay, so then do the task immediately. So if you have a child who you tell them to go clean their room and they disappear and they're sitting on their bed reading books instead of cleaning their room, they don't know how to follow an instruction. They do it immediately and they check back. I teach them to check back so that I can praise them. If they don't check back, they don't get praised. If good does not equal good, why would they choose good? Praise is important to everyone, to children, to everything. If somebody tells me, wow, you know, I really liked that you shared that and I really enjoyed it, or it helped my family, you know, they send me an email or something, I just go, oh, I just stand a little bit taller, like, I'm so glad, thank you, because I got praise, right? And so everyone feels the same way, and your children want that too. All right, the second one of the basic four, or the four basic skills, is accepting no for an answer or criticism. The steps are very much the same to following instructions. So you look at the person, you keep a calm voice and a calm face and a calm body, you say, okay. So it's all the same, and then you drop the subject. So let's say somebody said to me, Mom, can I go to that party, you know, that they're having over there? And then they look at me and I say, no. They need to be able to say, okay. That's it. And not say, but Mom, it really looks like a really, you know, harmless party and this kind of thing. And then an hour later be sulking, okay? That's not dropping the subject. If they are still thinking about it and having problems, they are not dropping the subject. They are not accepting the no answer or the criticism. Now, be careful how you give criticism. You don't want to be mean, but we do need to give criticism to our children. We need to say things such as, honey, I think you need to go and brush your teeth, you know, or something like that. Or we need to wear a new outfit today. So go change an outfit. That's criticism as well as an instruction. But if they can't take that kind of criticism, then you need to teach them how to accept criticism. Well, actually, you got to teach all of them before. Now, don't teach following instructions right when you want someone to follow an instruction. what you do, or when someone didn't follow an instruction. That's not a good time to teach following instructions. The best time to teach following instructions, accepting no and all these things, is before there's ever a problem. You pull them all together and you say, okay, we're going to play this really fun game. It's called Learning How to Follow Instructions. And this is what you do. And these are the steps. And then you show them how to do it. And then you say, okay, I'm going to give you an instruction and see if you can do it. And then say, remember the steps. And then they go do it. And then you praise them. Wow, you looked at me. You kept a calm voice and a calm face. You said, okay. You did the task immediately. And you checked back. You were so good at learning this so fast. Okay, now you give me an instruction. And let's see how I do. They love that. They'll ask you to do all kinds of stuff. And because they want to see that you're going to follow these same rules. You know how to follow instructions too. And accept no answers and stuff. Okay, accepting a consequence is pretty much exactly the same as accepting a no answer. I mean, it's really quite close. So you look at the person, you keep a calm voice and a calm face, you say okay, you perform the consequence immediately, and then you drop the subject. Now, everywhere that it says drop the subject, the other option besides dropping the subject is they can ask you to disagree appropriately. That is number 4. Disagree appropriately. Do I want my children to just always be quiet whenever I speak? No. That would be lovely, actually, but I don't think that would raise them into the kind of people that I want them to be. And if there's anything I did learn from my dad, who was a great communicator, if I would voice an argument to him, he was a debater too, debate coach and stuff, and if I would voice an argument to him, and then if I all of a sudden just stopped, he'd say, no, keep going, tell me. He wanted me to communicate with him. So we do want them to, especially if it's in an appropriate way. Attitude problems are not appropriate. Whining is not appropriate. Hitting somebody is not appropriate. By the way, accepting no answers, accepting criticism and stuff comes from anybody. Accepting criticism from a friend, okay? The friend may be out of line giving the criticism, but you don't have to deck the person back, you know, or whatever it is. Or the brother or sister might not want to share their toy. They might say no. Now, whether that's right or wrong, they gave a no answer. So is it right to hit the person if they gave you a no answer? No. We have to learn no means no, and that's it. Then you can pull the other sibling aside and say, remember that party that we want to have 20 years from now and that feeling of sharing and loving? What do you think would be the loving thing to do if your brother or sister wants to borrow that toy from you? Do you think it'd be more loving to say yes? You pull them aside and still let them choose, but give them vision of why they should share, but then tell the other person that it's their job to accept a no answer if somebody says no. But they don't hit and stuff like that. Okay, so disagreeing appropriately looks like this. Benjamin, you're going to tell me no, okay? Benjamin, can I dye my hair blue?
No.
Okay, I understand that you don't want me to dye my hair blue because you probably don't like blue hair, and you probably think it would look really bad on me. But I'm in this play, and I'm supposed to be a fairy. And the play director says that we all need to have different color hair. And I thought blue might be the easiest to wash out because I knew that I wouldn't keep it forever. I'm going to probably use a color of blue that can wash out in a few days. But for a few days, I would have blue hair for the play. Is it okay if I have blue hair maybe just for a few days?
No.
Okay. Okay, so I disagreed appropriately with him. And actually, I forgot to ask him, can I disagree appropriately? That's what I would say first. I would say, may I disagree appropriately? And then I would say, I understand your side. This is my side. And then I asked again, you know, may I? And he said no still, so I said okay. But in a case like that, I'd probably say yes. And they'd be happy about it. Almost every time they disagree appropriately, I say yes. That is just how I do it. Because they need to know that when they practice that kind of restraint and self-government, and they are just choosing to maintain calm, to talk to me in an appropriate way, that it works. The only time I say no is if it is dangerous to them, or, you know, or there's just some circumstance where it absolutely won't work. But otherwise, I say, okay, can you hold your question for just a minute on this? Write it down. Okay. Because I want to move on really quickly to the rest, and then we'll make sure that we've got time for questions. All right, there are 5 different styles of teaching, and we're going to cruise through them pretty quick. I wish we could spend more time, but question and answer should help us use them a little bit better, too. All right, the first style is praising. It is really important to praise children. Everyone needs praise. We talked about that. But make sure that your praise is more than just good job. Now, sometimes good job works, but a really good praise would be something like, you know, I just passed by your room. I have never seen it that clean. I think you clean a room better than I do. That's a praise. That's something that they would care about. Or, you know, just now, you just saw that your brother or sister needed something. You stopped what you were doing, and you took care of that need before you did anything for yourself. That is so mature. I am really impressed. That is a praise. Describe what they did. You want to get yourself out of reacting to things into describing things. The more you can describe, the more in control you will be, and the more that you will show them what kind of power their choices have, so that they will choose more. They will visually see what it was exactly that they did good because you described it. For every time that you correct your children, you need to praise them 6 to 10 times. 6 to 10. During a correction of a certain behavior, you should praise them for how calm they are at listening to you. When you practice the correct behavior, for how well they practice, you should be praising them during that time. It really isn't about they caused pain to somebody, so we have to cause pain to them. No. They should be feeling like that the home is a safe place to make mistakes and that they're just being instructed and molded along this path. Okay, so the most effective style of teaching is actually praising. That is the most effective style. Because if you praise good behaviors in somebody, guess what everybody else wants to do? Be good behaviors. They do. If you praise one thing in one person, there will be a child that goes and does the very same thing, like because they want praise for it. And they will choose good just because people get praise. Okay, the second most effective style of teaching is called prepping or pre-teaching. And this is when you tell somebody how to behave before something happens. That's why it's called pre-teaching or prepping. So this is how it works. It's really quite simple. There's two different ways to use prepping. The first way is that you would say to somebody, I'm going to give you an instruction right now. What do they do? What does their brain do when I do that? They automatically go, look at the person, keep a calm voice and a calm face, say, okay, do the task, check back. Okay. Okay. And they're ready. You formatted them. You got them ready. They had to have no anxiety about the instruction because they know how to accept and follow instruction. Not a big deal. Or I say to them, okay, I'm going to give you a no answer. I'm going to give you a no answer right now. Do you remember how to follow a no answer or accept a no answer? And so then they say, yeah, and they tell me the steps to accepting a no answer. And I say, okay, here's your no answer. I'm telling them ahead of time that I'm saying no. It seems like we don't do that, right? We think it's understood that they would accept a no answer from their parents. But they're not ready to accept the no answer until you tell them, I'm going to give you a no answer. Try it. It's magical. It really is. And I don't believe in giving people tricks, but this is good communication that takes away anxiety. So anyway, just you tell them that, or you've earned a consequence, so I'm going to tell you what your consequence is. You don't tell them the consequence yet. That's the part they don't want to hear, but if they're ready to accept a consequence, then it's not going to matter so much what the consequence is, because they got themselves all ready to go. Okay, or you can say to them, as they're getting ready to yell at their sister, you should disagree appropriately, and just tell them, okay? All right, the other way that you use prepping is you say, okay, we're going to this party. This is the type of behavior that needs to happen at this party. This is what will happen if we don't have that type of behavior at the party. And that kind of a thing. And so you make sure that you tell them ahead of time exactly, you know, what is expected of the party and what will happen if they don't. Have it all set up ahead of time. Then you've made yourself a system for the party. Because you have a home system already. Or you've made yourself a system for the store, if the store is a problem. And you've got it planned out already. So then if somebody, you know, chooses wrong at the party, then you can just pull them aside and say, oh, you know, just now I noticed that you were being mean to some of the other children at the party. And we talked about how we needed to be nice to the children at the party. And that the consequence was that you needed to come and, you know, stand by me and you wouldn't be able to play with the children at the party for like 10 minutes if you weren't able to be kind to the children. And so you need to just come and be right here, okay? Remember how to accept a consequence? Okay. And then there they are. And they say, okay. And then you praise them, you know, for being so great about accepting their consequence. And so it turns into a positive interaction. Okay, that's prepping. Now, correcting a negative behavior. I'm going to kind of go pretty fast. There's still a lot for us to cover, but correcting a negative behavior. This is what everyone always wants to know. Okay, what happens when they choose wrong? What do you do? Well, I used to keep little cards in my pocket that would have all these things on them for like a whole year because it's a new language, it's a different way of talking, and I just wanted to make sure that I didn't fall back into my own language or miss something, like forget to tell somebody what they should have done correctly or something like that. So I have these little cards, and the first step is that you describe the situation. So, and I don't start saying anything else besides just now, usually, or sometimes when you, but I usually even say just now when you. Just now is my calm down word. That's my word that I don't have to get angry. I'm describing, I'm not reacting as a parent. When I say just now, then I know I'm going to describe a situation. And I describe everything in as much detail as I can. I don't believe in lectures. Keep things as short as possible. Okay, so don't get into big, long, drawn-out conversations. My dad used to keep me up lecturing me until like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I have no idea what he said. But I looked at him the whole time, just hoping he'd feel done. But he was waiting for me to show him, to communicate to him that I was a changed person. But at 2 or 3, yeah. Anyway, don't lecture. Don't lecture your children. Don't lecture family meetings. Don't lecture anywhere. Okay. The second thing is you give a rationale or a reason. You know, when you choose to do this, then you're actually wasting some of your time because when we talk about this, that takes precious time away from your playtime and you only have this much time left or that kind of a thing. The third thing is you describe what you should have done. So you say, just now, this is what you did. When you do this, this is what it communicates, or this is what you're actually doing to yourself. A rationale is something that always is going to matter to them. You want to give them something that will matter to them, not to you. If you say, this messes up my house, so they don't care. They don't have as much invested in your house as you do. And then you describe what you should have done. So then I say, what you should have done was, you should have looked at the person, kept a calm voice and a calm face, said okay, did the task immediately and checked back, or said okay and dropped the subject, depending on what you're teaching. And usually it can always boil down to one of those four things. Okay, and then you tell them, because you chose this, this is what you earned. We use words like chose and earned. This is what you earned. This is what you chose. We do not give consequences to our children. They chose them. That's self-government, okay? And then you praise them for accepting the consequence, and then you practice it 3 times. So you do role plays just like you would have taught the behavior before and do other little things like, oh, I need you to straighten the pillows on the couch. Oh, good job at following instruction. And you tell them all that kind of thing. And then you praise them again. All right. The very last, I'm going to say the very last one, and then I'm going to do this one. The very last teaching style is counseling. And I'm not going to touch on it that much, except for to say that counseling is like totally different. There's not exact steps to counseling. And what you do is you find a time where you can be with your family, or not your family, your child. When you can be with your child and you pull them aside and say, hey, you know what, let's go out on the porch for a popsicle. And you talk about something important, like, you know, dating or things like that. Okay, or, you know, some new behavior that you've noticed and you work out a plan with them. Like, what do you think would help you want to master this behavior? What can we set up as an incentive for you? Or what kind of a consequence would really matter to you so that you could master this in yourself? Because I don't want to see you held in bondage to this particular kind of behavior. That's counseling, okay. Now we're going to talk about the fourth style, which is what I call the rule of three, or intensive teaching. Teaching when they're out of instructional control. Out of instructional control is when somebody is yelling, whining, pouting, has an attitude problem, things like that. And those are the times that get us the most stressed. We really only need to invest about 10 to 15 minutes into that kind of behavior, okay? And it'll either stop before then or it won't. But that's the only investment that you really need to put into it. And you need to make sure that you give yourself that. You don't have to be controlled by that kind of behavior. All right. So this is how it goes. Rule of three. You do 3 things 3 times. So let's say that somebody is pouting. You gave them a no answer. They said okay, and then they walked over to the couch and pouted. So they didn't drop the subject. They weren't able to accept the no answer. And they were just sitting there pouting. pouting to themselves, trying to get some sort of okay. So then I go up to them and I say, it seems like you might be out of instructional control. Now in my family, as soon as I say that, they go, oh no, we're not. We're not out of instructional control. I'm good. Give me about 1 minute, Mom, and I'm good. I'm ready to talk about it. And I'll say, oh, good. I'm so glad that you're not. Woo. You know, they know that now, and none of my children ever go out of instructional control anymore. But your children at the beginning, if they are used to out of instructional control behaviors and if they have worked in the past, will. Okay? And they will probably lose all of their privileges a few times before they realize, I don't want to do that. That's not very fun. And they just learn it, okay? And they choose to control that behavior. And then they realize, I can do it. I can control it. All right, so I would say that, and then they stop. But if they don't stop, then I would say, you know, just now, I gave you a no answer, and you weren't able to drop the subject. And it seems like you might be out of instructional control. I'm going to give you 3 instructions. I'm going to give the first instruction. If you choose not to follow an instruction, that's what out of instructional control means, if they can't follow any instructions. If you choose not to follow the first instruction, then you will be choosing to earn a major maintenance. Then I'll give you a second instruction. If you choose not to follow the second instruction, then you will be choosing to not only earn a major maintenance, but to earn to do some sodas or problem-solving exercises. And then I'll give you a third instruction. If you choose not to follow that instruction, then you will be choosing to earn a major maintenance, do some problem-solving exercises, and lose your privileges for 24 hours. Here is your first instruction. So that whole thing was a prep. It was a pre-teach. I told them everything that was going to happen. And they need to know that because they don't need to have any anxiety when they're trying to decide if they're going to control themselves or not. They need to know the whole thing that's going to happen ahead of time. Then I say, okay, here is your instruction. So step number 2 is I give them an instruction. I need you to sit down and close your eyes and take 3 deep breaths. I usually do a calming kind of a thing, okay? So then either they say okay and they follow the instruction and you praise them for it and go, oh, good, I'm so glad you weren't out of instructional control. Okay, let's just, and then you praise them for it and then you talk about how they need to drop the subject, how that's part of accepting a no answer. So if you think you're going to remember forget what started the whole thing, okay, write it down and put a little notebook in your pocket. You got to write things down. I have sticky notes all over my cupboard. So-and-so didn't earn this privilege. This happened. And we keep little sticky notes everywhere so that I remember. It's all documented in the kitchen. And as soon as somebody knocks on the door, I go, I take all the sticky notes off. But that's my little brain, okay, on the cupboard. You could do whatever you want. I used to keep a notebook in the pocket, and that works too. Okay, step number 3 is if they didn't follow the instruction, then you say, just now I gave you instruction. And you wouldn't look at me, so I know that you're not ready to follow an instruction. And so you have earned to do a major maintenance when you are in instructional control. Then you go back into a prep. You prep again. Now I'm going to give you a second instruction. If you choose not to follow the second instruction, then you will be choosing to not only earn a major maintenance, but choosing to do problem-solving exercises or sodas. Then I'll give you another instruction. If you choose not to follow that instruction, then you'll be choosing to lose your privileges for 24 hours. If they follow the instruction, great. Praise, talk about it, talk about doing the major maintenance, and talk about accepting a no answer. If they don't choose to follow the instruction, so you give them an instruction. That's step number 2. If they choose not to follow the instruction, then it's step number 3. Okay, you chose not to follow the instruction, so now you've earned a consequence. So then it's the consequence again. All right, then one last prep. So you do it 3 times, 3 things, 3 times. Okay, I'm going to give you your last instruction. If you choose not to follow this instruction, then you will be choosing to lose your privileges for 24 hours as well as the things you've already earned. And so do you remember how to follow an instruction? Okay, here's your instruction. And then you give the instruction. And if they follow it, great. Praise them that they chose not to lose their privileges for 24 hours. But if they don't, let them lose it. They've got to test that system. They've got to know your system is constant, that you're going to always stick to it. So anyway, so then that's what you do. And and then you go on to teaching. Now, they might go out of instructional control for days. I've had children go out of instructional control for weeks. Here's the thing. When they go out of instructional control, they don't start their 24 hours until they are in instructional control. And if they stay out of instructional control, I go to them about every 10 or 20 minutes and say, are you ready to follow an instruction yet? If they are ready to follow instruction, which means they can look at you, keep calm, they're ready to respect you, and they're ready to be taught. Following an instruction is the base for everything. I'm going to take a few questions. It's actually, like, class time's over, but if you want to ask questions, this is usually, you know, one of the best parts. But I just wanted to get through all of it. Yes, Julie.
So how do you start that, like, if they're whining and crying and they can't even hear you?
Okay, her question is, how do you start that if they're whining and crying and can't even hear you? Okay, well, what you do is, well, you just say it anyway. If my children are, like, totally whining then I'll lots of times just go into their ear and say, it seems to me that you might be out of instructional control. Okay? Now, if they're little, oh, time out. I wanted to talk about time out. Because that would be more of a little child behavior.
Now, 4 and 6.
Okay, now a 6-year-old should be fine. 4-year-old even actually can do this, and it would be fine. But you'll have to see how that works. With timeout, this is what I do. I use timeout as a trigger place and not a consequence necessarily. It's a place to change, to be ready to be taught. Okay? And so as soon as they're having a problem, crying, whining, then I'll just say, oh, you know what? I think that we need to have some time to calm down because we're going to need to talk about following instructions. So I take them very loosely and gently by the hand, and I walk them over to timeout, and I sit them down, and then I say, as soon as you're done crying, because they almost always cry, and then I say, as soon as you're done crying and you're calm for 4 minutes, because you're 4, then we're going to talk about it, and we're going to high-five, and we're going to hug, and it's going to be great. So you get calm. So then you, as soon as they stop crying, then you wait for 4 minutes, and then you go back to them and go, oh, you are so good at sitting on time out, and big hug, and high five. You remember to do exactly what you said that you would do. And then you talk about it, and you would talk about it just the same. This is how you follow instruction. Let's practice it. With small children, practice it is really important. But that place I use as a place to change their hearts, not necessarily behavior. There was another question. Okay, right here in the middle.
I'd say it's still with little ones. Like, how early do you try to implement these things with kids, like 2 years?
Okay, the question is, how early do you implement this stuff? Age 2. Yeah, age 2, definitely. My children, I'll be at the store walking down the aisle, and they'll say, Mommy, can I have a pack of gum? And I'll say, no. And then my little guy will go, okay. And I'll go, Porter said okay. Porter said okay. 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 Porter said okay. Guess what happens? I just praised him so good that then my 6-year-old goes, Mom, can I have gum? Nope. Okay. London time, singing through the whole store. Okay? And they love it because I make a big deal out of it. Now, big kids, the praise needs to be something like, that was really mature. You are amazing. I can't believe that you did that better than me. But little kids, have a party. They love it. Okay, question back there. Okay. Yes. Well, the thing that she wants power, and so if she goes crazy, she's trying to get power. Okay, the question was, she's got a child who, even if she uses a calm voice, goes crazy and just blows up. And so here's the thing, is that calm voice is really important. Whenever you're doing any corrective teaching, there is no... Did you hear how I was talking? Okay, right now I'm going to give you an instruction. If you choose not to follow the first instruction, there's no anger, there's no happiness, there's no sarcastic, there's no nothing. Okay? When you praise, you're happy. You're intensely pleased. But when you correct, no emotion. Because you're not emotionally attached to that. And if you choose to show no emotion, you won't be emotionally attached to that. And your child will know that you don't hate them, but you want them to correct what's going on. Okay? So there's that. And that's good to talk calm. The other thing is that she needs to learn how to disagree appropriately. So you got to practice that a lot ahead of time. Show her that when she disagrees appropriately, it works. And then she probably won't blow up anymore because she just needs to know how to disagree appropriately. There's no one in here yet to speak, so I'm going to keep going. Is that okay? Sweet. Okay. Well, then we'll just keep going until we go on to our next thing. How about that? What time am I supposed to start? Sweet. Let's do questions for 7 minutes. I can do that. All right. Yeah, right here.
Do you think that children will start misbehaving so they can get one-on-one time with mom and the hugs? Does that make, you know what I mean?
Okay, but okay, the question is, will children start misbehaving so that they can get one-on-one time with mom? Some children could. You don't want correction time to be a reward necessarily. You want that other time to be a reward. So if my child is out of instructional control, I take 10 minutes to go through the rule of three. Then I leave them and I go to where all my other children are and we play games and have ice cream and read stories and sing songs and do all kinds of fun things. And then every 10 minutes, I go back to the other person and say, are you ready to follow an instruction yet? Oh, okay, you let me know when you are, because, you know, when you are ready to follow that instruction, then you'll be that much closer to being able to have fun with us, and we really miss you. Okay, then you go back over to good equals good, so you give all your good attention to the kids who are behaving good.
And,
well, yeah, you don't talk mean, you don't praise them while they're, you know, being all, you praise them for accepting a consequence, for looking at you, for whatever thing you can praise, you do praise. But if they're just out of instructional control and just, you know, you don't praise them, you just, you know, okay, well, you just let me know when you're ready to follow an instruction. And then you go back, and then what they soon learn is every time I'm out of instructional control, they all get ice cream, you know, or they all get, and they go, wait a minute, that's not right. You see what I mean? So good equals good and bad equals bad. Okay, over here.
The three steps for this, uh-huh. If they start following it after the first instruction, do you still keep going and go through it three times, or do you stop?
Oh, if they start following it after the first instruction, then you praise them for following the instruction, for how awesome they are, and then you just go with it.
You don't give the
answer. Yeah, the question was, do you keep going through the whole rule of three even if they've already followed an instruction? No, stop as soon as they follow an instruction and praise them, and then do corrective teaching on the things that happened. They didn't accept the no or whatever it was. In the back?
It's all this on your CDs.
All of this is on my CDs. I have 7 hours of stuff on my CDs. Yes. Okay, yes?
What if I have like a 13-year-old son who doesn't want to do a school or chores, and if I give a consequence, he just says, I'm not doing it. And once they're as big as you are, what
a 17-year-old?
He's 13.
13. Okay, you have a 13-year-old that says, I don't care, I'm not going to do my chores.
School or chores, and then if I say, well,
okay,
there's no consequence, or if you give a consequence or something, like,
and he doesn't follow. Okay, if you gave him an instruction and he didn't follow the instruction, then he's out of instructional control. As a 13-year-old, he can lose all of his privileges for 24 hours. The big thing is you have to follow through with that. You've got to make sure that for 24 hours he's working and doing problem-solving exercises. Okay, but then what happens is he punishes himself for a really long time. He will learn it. Those things don't start until he's in instructional control. So you say, well, you're still out of instructional control. So as soon as you're in instructional control, I promise you, they cannot keep it up. It is for very long. I mean, I had a youth go out of instructional control for a week once. Okay, that's the longest ever. And then after that, she had 24 hours of no privileges that she had to pay. They can't run from it. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to weasel out of it and work your system and run from it. If he's not ready to follow an instruction, then, you know, that's what happens.
Okay. So what would they be doing during that?
Okay, if he's out of instructional control, you want to just kind of keep him isolated. Some of them might think, oh, this is a great time to sneak in just some reading or whatever I want. And they'll be trying to reward them for that kind of stuff. But just knowing that they are still out of instructional control for consecutive days in a row, and that at the end, it's still going to be that 24 hours that they... it's still draining on them to know. And there gets to be a point where they want to change. Everyone wants a change. No, really, those kind of things. Now, when my children lose all of their privileges for 24 hours, we still have a certain amount of hours set aside for school, for homeschool, for time. And homeschool is not punished time, and I'm not upset at them during homeschool time and that kind of thing. But then later, when everybody else is playing and that kind of stuff, then they're doing work and doing problem-solving exercises. So we don't let that all the way take over school time. How many minutes do I have?
3 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to take these two questions here, and then I'm going to rest my voice for like 30 seconds. And then we'll start again on another class. Yes.
Okay, my question is, so time frame-wise, how do we start to implement this? So we need to come up with a family vision, first, right, and kind of develop that.
Timeline. What to do first?
Because obviously okay. I'm not going to go home and do it all, like good right question. Now, you know?
Okay, that is a good question. That's exactly, okay, the question is, okay, what do we do first, and how do we get it to that point? All right, that's exactly why I made the CDs, so that people can get the vision of the whole thing and then start little by little and do what they can. But the first thing absolutely is create a vision for your family, okay? That's first. That's why I started with that. Next, you want to build a structure, a meeting structure, where things are happening. And then after you've got your family meeting working, then you teach those four basic skills. Now, you can teach the four basic skills whenever. That's where you start very first. Before you would ever do all the different kinds of teaching, and like for sure an intensive teaching or something like that, they need to know how to follow an instruction and how to accept a no answer and that kind of thing. But it doesn't take very long. You can do play around for, you know, 20 minutes, and you can have all of those learned. Disagreeing appropriately is the only one that's a little bit trickier to learn. But the other three are, it's just saying okay. That's all they do is be okay, say okay. Okay. And that's pretty much it. And then do the task and check back. And then just make sure, you know, you praise them every time you check back. But do that, and then you can start implementing all the other things. Now, basic, have a vision for your family and make sure that they know it. And so that you can keep the spirit in your home. Spirit teaches, changes hearts. That's important. Second thing, have family meetings. If you're going to do no other meetings, have family meetings. And then third thing is teach the four basic skills. That's your beginning point. Okay? There was one more question. Yes?
My question is disagreeing appropriately.
Okay.
I think if they have the option to disagree appropriately, that it would just keep doing that in a cycle forever, and then we'd put it back to the same place of not.
Okay, well, here's the thing, though, is the last part of disagreeing appropriately is that they have to accept the answer of the parent. So once they've disagreed appropriately once, and you say no, then they say okay. Because that's a no answer. It goes back to a no answer. And that's it. But are you talking about they just see it works, so they keep disagreeing about everything?
Yes, and I'm like, if you just say yes when they disagreed appropriately, then they would always disagree appropriately.
Exactly. I want my children to always disagree appropriately. And their disagreements when they're little are so cute. I know you don't want me to have a cookie, but I really want one. Like, that's all they can give you. That's okay. It's a disagreeing appropriately, and it's them not going, I wanted a cookie. You see what I mean? It's really different. And it's self-mastery. They may be learning a system, but you want them to know the system in your home. But then, if they're getting to be really into it, then you have to say no sometimes. And then before you say no, be sure to say, you know, do you remember how to accept a no answer? Because part of disagreeing appropriately is to say no. And so, anyway, so then you say no. And then they need to say okay. Sometimes you do say no, especially if they're getting where you feel like they're playing a system on you. But otherwise, it's a good thing. Okay, I'm going to take a quick second, grab my new stack of notes, and then we'll start a class because it's supposed to start right now. And if you're here for that class, we'll just keep going.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.